You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz. David Ortiz. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined for episode 215 by my regular co-host, Keaton DeRosier of Over the Monster. Keaton, I introduce you as my regular co-host, but I feel like there's nothing regular about you. How are you, buddy?
So does that mean like I'm irregular or I'm just extraordinary?
It means you're extraordinary.
Wonderful. I'll take it.
I figured, you know, we can all use some compliments sometimes, Keaton. So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So on today's episode of the show, we have a good one for you. We are going to be talking about your first place Red Sox. We're going to be diving into some roster crunch issues that might be arising in the future. We're going to talk a little prospects, Jaron Duran, Tristan Casas. And then we're going to dive into the bullpen and talk some Martin Perez in the starting rotation. And then we'll get to your listener questions. So we've got a very full show today. Let's start off with the roster, Keaton. So Jonathan Arreaz was just sent down. It looks like Kike Hernandez is going to be activated from the IL. He had a couple bombs at Worcester on Sunday. It seems like the man is ready.
Yeah. A grand slam that Remy referenced several times on the broadcast on Sunday. Was very excited about that. I guess it'll be kind of interesting to see. I'm assuming he's going to go back into the leadoff spot.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, that seems to be the spot where Cora has been most comfortable playing him this year. I don't know what the internal metrics say for the Red Sox, and I know that it is kind of commonplace to have your best hitter hit second, which is where Verdugo has been hitting. And I don't think anybody would say that Verdugo is the best hitter on the team. He's a very good hitter, but the three guys behind him are probably better. It is an interesting alignment that they've chosen to go with sort of a rotating member of the cast, whether it be a Marwin or whether it be Kike or whether it be Michael Chavis. Yeah, it's just this odd collection of people batting leadoff. What do you make of that, if anything?
We probably read too much into it, I suppose, and that squarely is just looking myself in the mirror. So I've written two articles and two consecutive seasons about how who should lead off for the Red Sox. It only matters for one at bat, right? And then it's irrelevant the rest of the game. So, I don't know. Maybe that 2-5 makes more sense in their metrics, and it doesn't necessarily matter who's there in the leadoff spot. It's just, it's a lot of emphasis on that first at bat, because if you can get the first guy on, first one to score, there's several studies, call them. A lot of data to suggest if you score first, your chances of winning the game are pretty high. So we can get that guy on, push him home, get a run, and cruise the rest of the game. It just feels weird to have a guy who has a under 300 OBP leading off.
Yeah, and I mean the other guys that they've had leading off here too, Marwin and Chavis, and some of the other guys who have rotated through that position haven't exactly posted impressive OBPs. I have to think that, you know, the Red Sox being a very smart organization, Chaim Bloom being a very smart guy, there's probably something that we are just not seeing, because on paper, this strategy doesn't make any sense, because over the course of a full season, the leadoff batter is going to get more at-bats than anyone else in the lineup. So, you know, it does seem a little strange to me, and I still don't quite understand it. So there must be something here that, you know, we're just not quite figuring out. Like maybe a pitcher, you know, wastes more pitches on the first batter of the game, or I don't know. I don't know. It just feels like something's up there.
Yeah. I suppose we're just kind of nitpicky, though, because they are first in the division, so it's worked.
Yeah, and they are scoring more runs than, like, any team in baseball. So we can't really complain with how the offense has gone. Yeah. It is pretty damn good at this point. But, you know, it is worth talking about moving forward, like, what's going to happen with this lineup when guys start getting healthy. So we're talking about, you know, Kike getting healthy and coming back into this lineup. I assume he's going to play a good amount of outfield like he's been doing in the center field position. I assume there's going to be some type of playing time loser. Who is that going to be, in your opinion?
Oh, man. Franchi Cordero.
Has to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's still going to get into the rotation, I suppose, though he's the one guy that is more limited in his positional eligibility, right? Like, Chavis could play the outfield. Arroyo's got a couple infield positions he can play. Obviously, Marwin is playing everywhere. Franchi's really kind of stuck in left.
Right.
So, with everybody being more flexible, it's probably him. That, well, I mean, not just the flexibility, but also he sucks.
Yeah. Except when I'm there. So I was at the game on Saturday at Fenway. It was like 25% capacity, and they were playing the Angels, and Martin Perez was on the bump. And it was Alex Verdugo's 25th birthday. And, well, he hit a bomb, and Devers hit a bomb, and my boy Xander hit a bomb, and Franchi had two doubles during that game. So all I can think of, Keaton, is I need to go to every game in person, because when I go to games, Franchi hits doubles.
I mean, that's science.
Yeah, it's fact. You can't argue with it at this point.
What if they tried Franchi in leadoff spot? I mean, I think there's something, too. You kind of said, like, maybe the starting pitcher wastes more pitches on the leadoff guy.
Yeah.
I think you might be right. I mean, like, maybe not waste more pitches, but we'll approach a batter differently in the first at-bat of the game because they don't want to walk the leadoff guy.
Right.
So if there's more pitches in the zone and you want to turn a guy around, maybe try Franchi there.
Hey, you know what? I'd be cool with that, but it just seems like, looking at the way that the lineup has shaken out over the course of the time that we've had Kike on the IL, you know, Franchi's only started three of the last six games in left field, so he's already kind of been on the short end with playing time, and now you add Kike to the mix, and it's like, who takes a seat for him? You know, I think you probably want to play Marwin more than you want to play Kike. I think you probably want to play – you're not taking Hunter Renfro out of the lineup the way he's playing, man. Like, I don't know who – you know, are you – I don't know.
Bobby's turning it around too.
Yeah, Bobby looks great recently. So with four straight starts at first base there, I mean, I don't think you can really take him out either.
No. Yeah, he's probably the guy to go. I guess here's the other frustrating part. Aside from Just my wholehearted belief. Verdugo should be leading off. It's situational, and it's not going to come up commonly, but the game that they lost to the Angels on Sunday, yesterday, they got back to the top of the order with two outs and two on, needing a base hit to tie it, and it was Chavis instead of a guy like Verdugo,
right?
With Devers behind him, and then Martinez, and then Bogarts.
Yeah.
It's tough to turn it over and then be at Chavis, who strikes out to end the game.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not sure, you know, how much of that is just situational luck and how the game shook out. But yeah, it's tough to look at that and feel good about it. So, you know, this whole thing opens up some questions. Arreyes going down was pretty obvious. Kike coming up is, you know, equally obvious. But the Red Sox are going to have a lot more roster decisions here on the horizon as well that are worth exploring. Particularly Danny Santana, who we haven't seen at all this year, is likely going to be healthy and activated shortly. And, you know, you don't get a guy like that on this team to come in and not play, being, you know, a veteran who had an excellent season in 2019 and injured in 2020. So we think he is going to get a chance. And then Christian Arroyo not too far away with the hand contusion. So we have to start looking at, with those two guys coming back, who goes down. And this was sort of the question that, you know, Matt asked all of us as a staff on Friday in the roundtable, and we all had different answers. So, you know, what do you think is going to happen here? Do they abandon this three-man bench? Do we end up going with a four-man bench here finally?
I would. And that was my response, was I would go with the four-man bench, and I would get more run out of Chavis, which I'm sure was the expected answer. But if it's not, and he has options, so he can get sent down to AAA, and he can keep working on himself, and AAA is actually playing games now, so you wouldn't just be, you know, on ice down there.
Yeah.
I said before, I'm just done with Bryce and Taylor. I suppose Taylor has been better lately in his past like four or five starts. Bryce is still pretty bad. I don't need to see them anymore. So if you're going to keep one of them, I suppose keep Taylor because he's hot at the moment. But Bryce is out of options. Taylor has two. So it's probably, I would say, Taylor goes down, and Chavis also goes down, and then they go with a four-man bench of, I suppose that would be Marwin, Plawecki, Arroyo, and Santana.
Yeah, that's the bench I'd go with, too. Marwin, Plawecki, Arroyo, and Santana. I think that makes the most sense. You know, you can put Santana and Marwin pretty much anywhere. Arroyo can spell people defensively, start at second base if you need him to. Plawecki, great backup catcher there, so that's a no-brainer. The only thing I'd quibble with is you know, who to DFA or send down, and to me, right now, looking at how we have the bullpen set up, you know, I don't see any use for Austin Bryce at this point. I am very certain that we don't need the extra bullpen arm at this point. And we certainly don't need Austin Bryce as an extra bullpen. Like, we can have somebody else pitch those mop up innings at this point. I've seen enough of Bryce to realize that, like, yeah, he might be a spin rate darling with his fastball, but he has a hideous delivery and is constantly out of whack with it and is wild often. So I see zero need for him. Josh Taylor, I think we've kind of seen coming around a little bit. And, you know, if he doesn't, you know, we have the options there. We have a couple options for Josh Taylor. So we could explore and send him down or send Phillips Valdez down or something like that. There's a lot of other places where you can go. I just think Bryce's time has kind of run out, and I'm not going to lose any sleep over DFAing him because, you know, he's not a positive at all. The Josh Taylor gambit on Sunday actually worked out, bringing him in a key situation to the game. So, you know, I think you got to keep him on the roster at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, where are you on Phillips Valdez?
Not necessary right now. It's, you know, it feels like we have two guys on this team, Phillips Valdez and Austin Bryce, who are squarely pitching in mop-up roles at this point. And
his numbers, you know, are significantly better, though. I mean, he's got a 2.93 ERA.
Yes.
His FIP and XFIP are even lower.
But he's always pitching in games, it feels like, when it's kind of out of hand. You know, it just shows to me what kind of Cora thinks about him. And he also had that weird, really long layoff between pitching where he pitched on the 10th and then he didn't pitch till the 15th. You know, it was kind of a long layoff. And then he had another long layoff that he didn't pitch from the 24th all the way to May 6th. And people were like, well, what the hell's going on here? So I mean, if you're going to use a guy that sparingly and in such low leverage situations, what's the point? You know?
Yeah. To me, I think, I mean, I'm 100% with you on Bryce. Toss him. Taylor and Valdez, I could kind of go either way, but I mean, you make a pretty good point that they brought Taylor in a high leverage situation because he had a stretch where he's been really good. And he wasn't the one that blew it. So, you know, it worked out. And if they're not going to use Valdez, basically what I'm getting at is two of those three, get rid of them and bring up Pizzardo.
Oh, I'm here for it, man. I'm very here for the Edward Pizzardo experience. You know, he's one of the few relievers down at AAA who are on the 40-man roster, Colton Brewer and Brandon Brennan being the other two. And he's actually thrown pretty well. I mean, he's only thrown three innings so far, or a little less than three innings down at AAA. But, you know, he looked good when he came up here and threw three innings. So, I don't know. I'm confident in Pizzardo's stuff. I think that he's a better option than either Valdez or Bryce, and quite possibly a better option even than Taylor at this point.
Yeah, I would say two of those three down or get rid of. Chavis probably goes down, and then the bench is the four-man bench we talked about. And then I'm not convinced Danny Santana is any good. We talked about him on a pod recently. I don't remember which one it was. But really, he had one really good year, and the other years he's been trash. So yep. I'm not convinced that you know, what he was in 2019. He had some injury issues last year, but I don't know how much of his 2019 self he really is. But give him a chance. If he sucks, then get rid of him and then bring Chavis back up.
All right. So let's go with the four-man bench right now with Danny Santana, Christian Arroyo, Plawecki, and Marwin once everybody's healthy. Yep. DFAing Bryce and sending down Phillips Valdez. Okay. So now we have Edward Pizzardo up instead of Phillips Valdez with that four-man bench. Things are looking pretty good. How long do you give Danny Santana to see what he is before you let him go and bring up Mr. Jaren Duran, who is currently slashing .283, .389, .609 at AAA Worcester with four home runs, three stolen bases, and a .159 WRC+.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess it wouldn't be bringing Chavis back. It'd be Duran. I mean, not very long, because I don't think Danny Santana is... well, I guess it depends.
But you also don't have to get rid of Danny Santana. You can option Franchi instead.
Right. Well, that was actually kind of what I was leaning towards. Like, I don't know if Santana is an everyday player, but he also can play every single position on the diamond.
Right.
And so he would be a great fourth outfielder or... fifth outfielder, fifth infielder, whatever role you want, if he's not going to be his like 2019 self and be an everyday player. If he can just be serviceable, which shouldn't take much to be more serviceable than Franchi is right now. And if Franchi needs to get some confidence back, then yeah, option Franchi, keep Santana on the bench and bring Duran up. I would say, I mean, I've been ready for, you and I have been ready for Duran for a while.
Yeah.
I think we both wanted him to break camp. And so I would have a short leash because I don't think you can just let Duran stew at a 158 WRC plus for an extended period of time. Like, you gotta, that's gotta, he's gotta be up there.
Yeah, and I mean,
couple weeks,
Duran's not without his issues. Like, he's excelling at AAA. It's fair to say he's excelling at AAA. Yeah. But the one thing I think that, you know, you could point to is just the fact that he is striking out a little bit more than maybe the team wants him to. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, there are some things that he can work on. Certainly defensively, there are some things. And with him, that's not, you know, this is not the Jared Kelnick. He needs to work on his defensive things. There really are some issues with his reads. And he is striking out at a 27.8% clip at AAA right now, albeit he's walking more than ever too, 14.8%. So that's great news. They probably want to see him get that number of strikeouts down a little bit before he comes up. So I'm thinking, like, at the very most, Jaron Duran has a month left down there. I can't see them holding him up much longer than that, unless something goes wrong or he struggles mightily.
Unless there's a massive turnaround with the outfielders they have, but I don't foresee that.
Right? Like, how good would Franchi have to be to prevent Duran coming up in a month? Like, he'd have to catch fire.
He'd have to have Duran's line.
Yeah, right?
That was, I mean, the thing that gives me hope, I mean, you're right about the strikeouts, but, so Cora was asked about Duran, and he was like, he needs a little bit more work, the inside fastball is kind of getting him, and then Duran's response to that, I believe it was literally a day later, was to take an inside fastball and park it 440 feet away from him.
Yeah, so, that was nice.
yeah, so whatever he was doing seems to be working.
Well, I hope Cora will continue to point out his flaws so he can go ahead and address those immediately. Yeah, that's pretty nice. So it is worth mentioning, too, you know, discussing all this roster stuff, the roster could look quite differently by the time June rolls around, you know, when all these things that we just mentioned happen and Jaron Duran potentially forces his way into the lineup. It's not outside the realm of possibility that Tristan Casas, who, you know, we've been talking about for so long now, it seems like, could potentially put himself in this mix at some point later in the year, looking way later. He's off to an absolutely torrid start at Portland, especially over the last few games. He's been really on fire. His line is 341, 383, 568 with three home runs and a 158 WRC plus. I mean, I guess my first question to you, Keaton, is when do they decide that, you know, he's handling Portland to the degree that he needs to and push him up to Worcester?
Yeah, I think the end of June would probably be the soonest. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's off to a super hot start, but this is his first taste of the upper minors.
Right.
It needs a chance to adjust to him. I mean, and then if it doesn't, then yeah, it's too easy. Move him up.
Right.
I'm assuming it will adjust, and he'll have to tweak things a bit. But then again, I mean, there's a real chance, like, beginning of September, he could be in Boston if he just continues this pace at both AA and AAA. And the Red Sox have shown, particularly with their hitting prospects, that they'll be aggressive, and guys like, Devers only played like 40 games above A ball before he was in Boston. Moncada was like 12. Benintendi was like 30. So, I mean, if they're performing, they even have, you know, demonstrated the willingness to skip AAA altogether with guys.
Yeah.
And just send them straight to Boston. So, not out of the realm of possibility there. I suppose the other piece of it is what Dalbec is looking like, and over his last 10 games, Dalbec has been significantly better.
Yeah.
Had like 300, three homers, 11 RBIs. So he's turned it around. And he's just making some real solid contact, which is really nice to see. So I think it's kind of a combo. If he continues this pace, probably a month and a half could be in Worcester. And then again, maybe a month and a half if he continues that at AAA. They could give him a shot in September. Wouldn't shock me if that was the case. But I think it's still less likely, and probably more likely it's like an early 2022.
Yeah, I'm so confident in this guy's bat. I kind of agree with you on the timeline, you know, especially with it being so clogged at DH and first base right now. It just, unless they made like a trade, you know, some type of substantial trade, which opened up a spot for him. I mean, it doesn't seem like you would trade JD in a year where you're battling for first place in the division. So that doesn't seem quite likely. I think the guy who would have to be traded and or well, I'd say traded or struggling. Because if Dahlbeck is doing well, you know, they could potentially shop him. But if he's struggling, I mean, I think that he could be replaced by Casas if Casas goes up to Worcester and just destroys the baseball. So we'll see. It's definitely a possibility at this point. But I am so sold on this kid as the next star of the Red Sox. I think he's going to be like more in line with the Xander Bogaerts, I should say, Devers type homegrown guy than, you know, a role player. I think he's going to be a star.
I completely agree. So you brought up Sandy Martinez. I was also going to bring him up because something that could affect Casas' timeline is JD Martinez is having an MVP-like season. Does he opt out of the last year of his deal?
He could. It's interesting. I don't know what he would try and do. I don't know, because the financial situation is so uncertain, especially going into what? I mean, isn't this the last year of the CBA?
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, so like, what do? Do you take your money or do you try and figure out what the next financial landscape in baseball is going to look like? You know, that could be kind of scary too, especially for a guy who's a DH.
And 34 years old is what he'll be for next season, his age 34 season. I think that would be, I mean, so he's guaranteed 1 year, $20 million. I suppose if he thinks that he can lock down like a 4 year deal from some other AL club, that's in the range of like 60 to 80. He might take that.
Yeah, he's got to.
Yeah. But I don't know if, like, I don't think he's going to get something similar to what he just signed, which is $21 million, 20 something, $22 million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, $22 million a year. I don't think he's going to find that AAV as free agent as a 34-year-old DH.
Yeah.
So I think yeah, it depends on, you know, how he feels about, or his agent feels about what a new CBA could look like.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's potentially willing to go like 4 years to his age 38 season. But I mean, if he's in like the top five for the MVP, I'm sure someone would give him some kind of deal, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. You have teams like, you know, the Angels, who are getting money off the books. I mean, this was the last year very publicly of Albert Pujols' deal out there, and I don't think Justin Upton has long left, and you know they need to continue to add to that team. It would kind of clog things up unless Shohei Ohtani ended up playing more outfield, so maybe that's an unlikely situation. But you have other clubs who are getting good, like you know, the Seattle Mariners, or maybe Texas wants to add to that team, you know, that is having trouble scoring. So I don't know. There seems to be more options than maybe there were for him last time he was looking, and especially more options than a guy coming off the worst season of his career. It's hard to think that JD is going to end this season and be like, yeah, you know what? I'll probably be in a better position to get a long-term deal after this next year. I don't think so. I think he knows what happened to him before, and like you said, performing at this level, he's probably going to be looking for that cash. So
yeah,
that could really free up that spot right away.
Yeah, I think if he has a good season, he probably might, because I don't know if he would want to risk having a poor 2022.
Right.
And then not be in a situation to sign, like, a four-year deal somewhere else.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think if he's going to continue on this pace, then, yeah, that spot might be open for Casas or Dalbec. Someone, basically the roster spot would be open for Casas starting 2022 in the beginning.
Yeah. Yep, I totally agree. And that might give you an opportunity to play guys like Devers at DH a little bit more, too, if you want to rotate, Dalbec in at third base, too. So all sorts of different things. But it's nice to see Bobby Dalbec get it going lately as well. That's been good. So let's talk about where the Red Sox sit right now. We've kind of been checking in every time we have this show about where they remain, but they have a huge series coming up. And this is a quote from Alex Speer's article today. He says the Red Sox remain in an enviable spot in first place in the AL East after more than a quarter of the season, with a game and a half advantage over the Blue Jays heading into the season series, or into the series between the two teams, starting on Tuesday. So this is a huge series for the Red Sox, but in that same article, he also points out that their bullpen shortcomings this month have been pretty apparent. Relievers have been charged with 6 losses in May, most in MLB, and 5 blown saves, tied for second most. There's no doubt the bullpen is going to have to be on its game to keep this up. And also, you know, Chaim Bloom is going to have to look into improving this unit, whether it's just the moves we talked about internally, bringing up Bizzardo, but facing the offenses that they're going to be going against. And we kind of highlighted what the schedule looks like moving forward. It doesn't really lighten up after the Blue Jays. You've got the Phillies offense, which is good. And then you've got, you know, it seems like every team on the schedule can hit. This bullpen's going to continue to be tested.
I haven't had a single game against the Yankees yet.
Yeah.
That's big. What's and wild is that this, we thought that this division would be pretty competitive. And then it started off, basically, everybody started off slow except the Red Sox. Jumped out to a nice little lead here. But since then, the Red Sox have come back down to earth, and the other three teams have taken off. And if the Red Sox get swept by the Blue Jays, there's a real possibility that they find themselves in fourth place in the division.
That's crazy. It's crazy that that could happen, but you're right. I mean, the Blue Jays are a game and a half back, Yankees are 2 back, and the Rays are 2 back. It's a stacked division. This division's sick.
Yeah, it is. And the bullpen, we were worried about it coming into the year. It started off really hot. Barnes has been tremendous, but everybody else has been pretty inconsistent.
I've been really worried about Ottavino and injuries, particularly the way that those two have looked lately.
Yeah, I mean, particularly Ottavino with the walks. I mean, they had to bring in Barnes to bail him out for a 5-out save against the Angels, and then it unfortunately fell inches short. But even, I mean, he made the one mistake on the inside fastball to Ohtani, but outside of that one pitch, still looked brilliant.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Barnes.
Yeah. But it's everything else, and I think bringing up Bizzardo has to be a no-brainer at this point, because you're trying to find guys to bridge the gap to Barnes, and you don't feel great about the options you have. Whitlock has been really good, but when he's been given high-leverage situations, he's stumbled a bit.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he just needs to work through that or if it's just not necessarily the role for him, but I still feel pretty positive when he goes out there. You're right, Andrés is coming back down to earth. I mean, everybody else is just kind of a jumble, or they're like not using Valdez. Darwin's and Hernandez looks like a stud, but is wildly inconsistent. Right. He had that stretch of like 9 innings where he struck out like 24 dudes, some ridiculous amount.
Yeah.
And then his next outing, like, walk space is loaded and then doesn't even get through a third of an inning. So he needs to be wildly more consistent. Which would be a nice little uptick for this bullpen here, but I don't see that happening like with a snap of your finger. So, I mean, we talked about wanting them to add like 2 high leverage relievers in the offseason, and they really only added Ottavino.
Yeah, he's been borderline.
right,
with his control issues. And we knew he was going to have control issues, but they've been a little bit worse than I thought they'd be.
Same. Yeah, and I think Pizarro could be one of those. So I that's why I think it's a no-brainer. He needs to be up here in some form or fashion very soon. And then the other thing is that I think they need to go outside of the organization to add another high-leverage reliever somewhere. And hopefully, like, soon they could kind of get ahead of the – like, I don't think the division is too tough for them to wait on it.
Right.
It's they clearly need to make a change. I don't know necessarily who they could go to. But, like, Texas sucks, and Ian Kennedy is pretty good.
Yeah, he is. I agree with you on the fact that they need to add to this pen at some point. I think you try the internal stuff right away and see if some of these guys get back on track. The other thing, you know, that I want to mention here is just that I think they need to utilize Hirokazu Sawamura a little bit more. He hasn't pitched as much as I'd like him to. He's only pitched 4 times so far in May. And I don't know, you know, what's going on with that. His last appearance on the 11th, he was used for 2 innings and got 4 strikeouts and didn't allow any runs. So he looked really good there. But his stuff to me is stuff that plays in a late inning role. You know, the stuff is filthy when it's on. And I think that he needs to continue to get those spots to maintain confidence. And I think that he could be one of those solutions. In fact, you know, I feel every bit as confident in him just from a pure baseball ability standpoint as I do in a guy like Ottavino. I think he's in that second tier of guy in terms of skill level.
Yeah, and you and I both talked about before the season, like, we hoped that Sawamura was going to be used like that because we thought that he could be a guy in that role. But then Cora was asked about it, and he said right away that he was not going to do that with Sawamura, bringing him over to the United States and then immediately putting him in those higher leverage situations. But I think, like you said, we've seen enough now that he can handle himself in those situations, and the Red Sox need people to bridge to Barnes and hold small leads. So I think you have to start turning to him more often.
Yeah.
And I think it has to, like you said, it has to be immediate, and you working with the internal options. So, like, right away, start turning to Sawamura, maybe give Pizarro a chance, and then kind of reassess. But going into this stretch against a bunch of teams, I haven't looked beyond the Philly series, but when we looked at, like, the whole stretch, they had, like, an entire month of, like, all AL East teams, didn't they?
I believe so. They had a lot of division games coming up, but, I mean, it's tough to look past the sea of tough righties that they're going to be facing in this upcoming Toronto series with Semien and Bo and Vlad and Teoscar and even Grichuk's having a season. It's just,
yeah,
it's insane. They're going to need all these guys to be on point. Yeah. They're right-handers especially.
By the time they get into that, it's like the first Yankee series is June 4th, and then it's just like a rash of divisional games.
Yeah.
You have to have it figured out by that series.
Yep, I totally agree. And you know what? Next week on our show, we'll start putting together a list of some potential trade candidates to supplement this bullpen. It felt a little early to start on that in mid-May right now, but I think that, you know, you're right, Keaton. I think this is something that if they're going to address, they need to address sooner rather than later because, you know, with this start, they've gotten themselves into a good position. But
They wait till closer to the trade deadline, because they have all these games against the division, they could be buried by the time they get there.
Yep.
So yep. That's why it needs to be sooner.
Yeah, I totally agree. Absolutely. they still are in a good position, though. I mean, they have the best run differential in the division right now, in second, or I should say third best run differential in the American League. So still in a very good position there. But yeah, they need to fix this bullpen. That's the thing I'm most worried about, is the bullpen and the bottom of the lineup. The good news here is that, you know, as we mentioned, usage, bringing up Pizarro and bringing up Jaron Duran could potentially solve a lot of the issues that you have just internally. So
does Jaron Duran bat leadoff?
Oh man, I think so, right? He's so fast. He's so good. I think so. I don't think Cora will do it right away because it would put a lot of pressure on him. But I think you have to soon. Like, week into the career, you got to put him up there. Maybe 2 weeks.
I mean, Durant at the top, and then Verdugo, Martinez, Bogarts, Devers. I mean,
that's electric.
That's runs right there.
Yeah. That's literally runs. Like, so many runners.
Even Christian Vasquez.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you mentioned the bottom of the lineup. There's been a few games recently the bottom of the lineup has actually carried the offense.
Well, yeah. Hunter's been correct.
Delivered wins. So I'm not – I think – I mean, we knew what the bottom of the lineup was going to be. It was really going to be feast or famine. There was times where they were going to struggle. It just sucked because right off the bat, they were all struggling together.
Yeah.
Which made it look a little worse. But, yeah, like you said, Renfro's coming around. Dalbec's coming around. Tough little lineup we got in Boston.
I love Renfro.
Same.
you really I get it now what you're into with Renfro. That dude has a cannon.
Yeah.
Did you see Chavis talking about his throws?
No.
Oh my god, watch that video. Chavis is like a fan. He actually sounds like one of us talking about how accurate Renfro's throws were and how effortless they look. You got to look up the soundbite on Michael Chavis there. If anybody out there hasn't seen that, it is hilarious. It is peak Chavis in terms of his just electric personality, and it's funny as hell.
That's great.
Yep. All right. So, Keaton, I want to talk about one more thing before we end up getting to our listener questions here. So I mentioned I was at the game on Saturday, and you know, I saw Martin Perez start. So naturally, I was there repping the Perez Day shirt that Zach, fan of the podcast, sent to all of us. And I saw Martin Perez's best start of the year. He pitched 6 innings against the Angels, only allowed 3 hits, 4 walks, which was a little bit, you know, high for him, 5 strikeouts. But the important piece here was 0 earned runs. Over his last 4 starts, Keaton, 22.1 innings pitched, 1.61 ERA with 22 strikeouts. So he's striking out a batter per inning, or a tiny, tiny touch under during that time. Martin Perez looks awesome right now. And he's been one of the stabilizing forces of this rotation all year. I'm extremely encouraged by what I've seen from him. He's only had one start this year where he's given up 4 or more, and that was just a 4-run start. So I'm curious to see where you are on Martin Perez, and sort of I'd be curious to see where you rank him in your trust levels in this rotation right now.
I'm still not as excited about him as you are, but I know he's your boy. I feel pretty confident with him going out there. I mean, you mentioned the strikeouts. He also had 4 walks in his latest.
Yep.
But the majority of his starts, he's gone 5 innings, given up 2 runs, and that's kind of what you expect from him, right?
That'll work.
Just really funny to see how sometimes he does it with 7 strikeouts, no walks, or 3 strikeouts and 4 walks, or 5 strikeouts and 4 walks. It's just like the array. It's like either, however he's pitching, he somehow comes out to 5 innings, 2 runs. which, when you're looking at a 4th, 5th starter, I mean, that's actually really good for the guys at the bottom of the rotation. And you mentioned that he only has 1 win, and I was initially thinking that that wasn't all that surprising. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, actually, I mean, if he's handing over the bullpen – having only given up 2 runs, the offense should score more than that. So it actually is kind of surprising that he does only have the 1 win. But I think I'm really comfortable with him being in the role delivering the results that he is. I'm not expecting a streak like this to continue for an extensive period of time, but I also don't expect him to implode.
Right.
You know? So I think 5 innings, 2 runs is a pretty solid start.
Do you right now, so I'm gonna take some guesses here. You're telling me if I'm right. You trust Nate Eovaldi more than him? Yes.
Yes.
Eduardo Rodriguez?
Yes.
Gary Richards?
Yes.
Of course. Nick Pivetta?
No.
Okay.
I'm so still now, not there with Pivetta. It's he's playing with fire. And we actually talked about this on the pre-cap with Shelley. It's great what he's doing, but all of his, like, it was really nice. His last start gave me a little bit more hope because he didn't walk anybody.
Right.
And walks had never been a really significant part of his game until this year. He somehow managed to completely limit the damage from him, but he was walking just an ass ton of people and just not getting hurt by it. Which felt like he was really playing with fire given the amount of contact and his history for home run fly ball rates in like the 20s. So I was encouraged by the last start. If he can string a few of those where it's like 0-1 walks together, then I'll start to believe a little bit more. But I still feel like he's playing with fire.
Well, I mean, I'm convinced at this point that our boy Pivetta has stolen Jacob DeGrom's life force since that start. So since that start, he's pitched 22 innings, and he has a 2.86 ERA with 24 strikeouts in just 8 walks. So he's dropped his walk rate substantially since that Mets start, and he's upped his K rate. The dude. So it's just funny though, because like, you know, looking at it, and I asked you your confidence level in these guys, and we went through, and the two guys you have lowest confidence in, Pivetta and Perez, are the two guys with the best ERAs on the team right now. It's just, it's kind of funny how it's all shaking out.
Well, yeah. I really hesitated on Eovaldi because he's just wildly inconsistent. And yep.
The strikeouts and walks are great, but
yeah, the results just aren't.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, not that there's a correlation between fantasy and real life baseball, but I was in a close matchup on Sunday and I benched Eovaldi because I just had a bad feeling. Like, I couldn't trust him. I thought he was going to wreck my ratios. And turns out if I had played him, he would have wrecked my ratios. So I don't think he's like a, oh yeah, we're getting 6 great innings out of this guy. But I feel like that with Eduardo Rodriguez and Gary Richards.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's clear that Eduardo Rodriguez is probably, I would say Eduardo Rodriguez and Garrett Richards have the highest ceiling on the team in terms of their stuff when they're on. We've obviously seen Garrett Richards be a very different pitcher over his last 4 outings as well. It seems like, you know, New York Mets dumped a lot of magic on the Red Sox starters there, so that was cool. But, you know, you look at the underlying numbers at Nate Eovaldi, and it just looks like he should be better. I mean, in terms of barrels, he's right there among the best in this rotation, 4.1% barrel rate. The only person better than him in this rotation is Garrett Richards with a 4%. He has the lowest hard hit percentage, even lower than Martin Perez. Lowest walk rate, you know, kind of a mid-pack K percentage, but, you know, his K-minus walk rate is the best on the staff as well. It just seems like there's just one big hit every outing for him that screws it up lately.
Yeah, and Shelley and I, before the start against the Angels, talked about him on the pre-cap, and that because he was just coming off of a really strong start after kind of struggling a bit.
Yeah.
But the starts where he struggles are actually the starts where, you mentioned, like, his stat line looks great, where he goes like 6 innings, has 8-9 strikeouts, 1 walk, but he's 2 in the strike zone, so he racks up all those strikeouts, but also gives up 8 hits and 5 runs.
Hmm.
And it's the games where he actually, like, will labor-ish through, like, 5-6 innings, have, you know, 4 or 5 strikeouts, still only, like, 1 walk. But those are the games where he won't give up any runs. It's because he's one of those guys, it's rare, where if you pitch to contact, you won't get burned. But he can do that. Like, he can work around the edges. He can pitch to contact, and he won't get burned. It'll like the corner infield and outfield will get some work, but they'll get the outs and he won't be like hurt. And then he's in the strike zone too often, racking up strikeouts, and then there's two hits, you know, back-to-back bombs, and the game's over.
Yeah, he needs to utilize that elite command that he has a little bit better and be okay not racking up those Ks. I agree. I think that's when we see the best version of Eovaldi, for sure. All right, well, let's get to a couple questions here before we wrap things up. We got one question from Sox Junkie, who says, how do we stop the Yankees from acquiring John Means?
Well, I think the solution would be to acquire John Means.
Yeah, I think that would work. Love me some John Means. He's nasty, so that'd be good. I don't know. I think the Yankees will probably look to add to that starting rotation because it hasn't been quite as good as they were hoping. But also the cost for someone like John Means would presumably be pretty high. So I'm not sure what that would actually look like. But Shelly came back with her own question. Shelly Verschrate, our own Shelly. She says, more importantly, how do we stop the Yankees from acquiring Max Scherzer? And I agree with her. That's the scarier one because he doesn't have long left on his deal, and he's pitching like a Cy Young candidate this year.
Yeah, I think the way you do it is you convince the Yankees that anybody that has the two eye colors is Max Scherzer, and they just sign the wrong person.
Well, you know what would be sweet? Red Sox just go out and acquire Max Scherzer and then sign him to an extension, and then everything's perfect.
Agreed.
I would love that. I want Max on this team so bad. That would be amazing.
I would agree with that. You'd have to get Washington to pay a lot of that salary, though.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably
would. Is he in the last year? Oh, wow.
He might be.
The very first name that popped up on Yield's Bo-Track was Max Scherzer. It's like they knew we were talking about him. He is. He is in the last year of his deal.
Okay. He has that weird deferred deal, though. So his money actually isn't as high as it seems.
Correct. He is owed purposes. $15 million a year for the next 7 years. But that is solely in the hands of Washington and the Red Sox, or whoever he would be traded to would not pick that up.
Interesting. Very intriguing. Our final question of the day comes from Michelle B., and she says, is Manny Machado an asshole?
You know, I don't think he is, which be a controversial take.
Yeah, that is.
He ended Pedroia's career. I don't think you can argue with that. He slid in late and then dug his cleats into his knee, which was pretty avoidable.
Yeah.
However, he is not the only person to slide late into second base in Major League Baseball. It happens all too frequently. But this play was none of that. I mean, the only option he had was to go down, and he didn't run out of the baseline. He stayed right in his line and just went down. And, I mean, it's hard for a fielder to tag going down and then get up and throw to first. Like, every other situation, there was a double play, except if he went down and he broke up the double play. So I can't really blame him for that one. I think this one was fine.
Manny Machado's an asshole.
Yeah. You remember, it was not long ago at all that people wanted to trade Rafael Devers plus for Machado when he wanted out of Baltimore. You remember that?
Yeah, I didn't like that. I don't know, man. I watched the play that I think Michelle is referencing. I didn't like it. His feet were too high, I thought. It always seems like he's trying to spike somebody. And there's been enough instances, especially early in his career, when he would like really, you know, kind of chirp at guys too. And there was the whole thing with the Oakland A's where I can't remember who he was chirping at on the A's, but somebody on the A's wanted to kill him. Maybe it was Josh Donaldson when he was with the A's. But there's just been too many guys around baseball who have had an issue with Manny Machado for me to think, like, you know, it's everybody else's issue and Manny is just this innocent guy. Plus, like, fuck this guy. He ended Pedroia's career. Like, that's it. That's enough for me. Okay, I didn't get to watch Pedroia for a couple more years because of Manny Machado. He robbed Pedroia of a chance to become unequivocally the greatest second baseman in Red Sox history. I still think he is, but he literally stole that from him. So, you know what? I really hate Manny Machado.
That's fair.
All right. What a way to end a podcast. Yeah. All right. We appreciate you joining us tonight for this edition of the show, wherever you're listening to us. It is tonight where we are, but you are probably listening to us during the day. We appreciate you. Please rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. We do appreciate it. And tune into the rest of our podcasts on this network as well. We have the Precap podcast with yours truly, Keaton DeRocher, over here, and Shelly Verstrait. We also have the Over the Monster podcast with Matt Collins and Brian Joyner. And finally, Shelly is on another wonderful podcast with Bob Osgood, the Red Sox On Deck prospect podcast. So check all those out, and we'll be with you again at this same time next week. Thanks for joining us.